Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now!
Production presents Black Urban America, the one of the few Black-owned internet radio station that addresses issues and solutions in the Black community. If you have a comment or a question, please dial 909-265-9215. That's 909-265-9215. Our lineup is: on Saturday night, we have Provocative Thought with Carlton Snead at 8 p.m. And as well, tonight, on Tuesday evenings, we have Black Girl of America, and my name is Kenny Jones. And on Wednesday, we have The Elephant in the Room with Jacques Azou. The second Tuesday of each month, we have Miss Ann Delia with Healthy Relationships. And the third Tuesday of each month, we had T. Nathan and discussing different political issues. Now, I will be reaching out to people in the next couple of months for sponsors and advertisers. Let's have a collaborative. You can advertise with us and we get your product out all across the country. Now, tonight, we have our guest. He is a political activist. Well, I should say a political prisoner advocate. I'm trying to get him on. Let's see. How about that? Oh, boy. Uh-oh. Oh, let me go back to the music. Let me fix this. Okay. All right, here we go. We got him back. Let's see. We got him back. Yes. Also, he works with the New African Liberation Front. So, I really don't know how to pronounce his name. He's on the line now, and I'd like to welcome. And also, he has his own radio program on WRPG 89.3 FM, and he is the organizer of the New African Liberation Front. And his name is Brother Scarborough. Welcome this evening, sir.
Peace, big brother. How you doing?
Fine. I just would like to thank you for taking time out from your busy schedule to come on the program and explain different issues that you're fighting. I know that you're strong with the advocating for the people that are held that are political prisoners, political prisoners, like people from the Move Movement, from the Black Panther Party. You know, I know you're involved with them, and also you're trying to create a new state for our people. So, where would you like to start?
Well, I always like to start with the soldiers. You know, I always say that no nation can call itself a nation if you leave behind your fighters who have stood up for you. It's like the definition of actually being a nation. You know what I mean? The United States, they put soldiers in Iraq somewhere. They're going to send special forces, the Navy SEALs, everybody to get those individuals back. And you may think, well, what's the cost? It's two or three people, you know, and you're going to, you know, send 12 or 15 more to possibly get killed. But it's very important in psychological operations that those who fight for you know that you're going to take that extra effort to see about their liberation if they are captured behind enemy lines. So it's very important that we bring to attention the community, because, you know, those guys are languishing, you know, many of them 40 plus years, you know, behind enemy lines. And it becomes a thing of isolation. And what they want is to be actively involved in struggle. So my organization, FreeMall Political Prisoners Liberation Campaign, by being an advocate and just writing to them, I receive, you know, all of this advice and history and, you know, just stuff I can use every day as an activist out of their experience. So that's the important aspect. The other important aspect is that we form political organizations that stand for them. I just mentioned my organization. There's also the Jericho Movement. There's Anarchist Black Cross, and many other organizations working around the prison agenda in general. And, you know, you have those different things, you know, and we can get a lot of energy behind mass incarceration or, you know, the three strikes agenda, juvenile justice and things of that nature. But oftentimes the political prisoners get lost in that prison conversation when we discuss what is going on. And that's a shame, because these brothers and sisters, the very same thing that we're fighting against right now, police terrorism, you know, that's what they were fighting against. So,
right.
I mean, it's like revolutionary history. If you want to know how to do best what you're doing now, you go to those who did it before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know as a young activist, I thought that, you know, the Black Panther Party, you know, those were our heroes. And, you know, analyzing it, saying that, you know, maybe they didn't have the spiritual component to it, that, you know, sometimes we make that mistake in saying those kind of things. But by having the experience of actually having been in federal prison with Baranza Bowers, the Black Panther, ex-Black Panther political prisoner, who is being held now, this is 14 years beyond his release date. You know, in federal prison, the life sentence back under the old law was 30 years. But when you do 30 years, you know, you're eligible for parole. And the funny thing with Baranza Bowers' case,
but some brothers are in there for 40 or 50 years.
Man, look, Baranza been at February 6th,
8, 7, 2, 68, 67, mm-hmm. 62, 66, been there since 73, 70, 86, yep. 71. He's probably been there for like 40 years, man.
Yep. And when you talk about the Move, when you talk about the Move organization, you talk about Mumia having been on death row, you talk about, you know, a whole family having been terrorized, the whole neighborhood burned down around them, and then them all carted off to prison. So these type of victorious stories of war against, you know, the bravery of these comrades. You talk about a Sekou Odinga who is out here now. You know, him and Matulu are the ones who broke Auntie Asada out. You know, and so mm-hmm. there's so much information in regards to Well, I mean, imagine being in the room having that technical conversation, you know, with Sekou. Man, how y'all got, auntie? You know, and, hey, man, mum's the word. Just practice, train some more. That's what he told me. I asked him, right? I was asking too much information. He said, just practice, train some more. Things are different now, you know. So that expert, you know, advice in regards to being involved in frontline revolutionary action in the United States is something that has to be encapsulated and captured for our next generations to know and carry down. We're still living in the age and period of it, but 50 years now, do they remember the feeling of what it felt like for Barack Obama to put another $1 million on Auntie Asada's head? You know, would they know what it feels like, you know, to fight for Matulu, knowing his great history, being Tupac's father and, you know, a Phoenix husband and being convicted of robbing Brinks trucks to give the money to Zimbabwe for them to finish fighting their war way in Africa? Will we remember how great he is 50 years from now? You know, these things have to be recorded. And there are a few volumes I would like for your audience to hear about in regards to just a full-on history of that of the Black Panther Party. There's actually an autobiography of the Panther 21, those comrades who went through the Panther 21 case in New York, where I like to add that Gene Roberts, who was the main witness against the Panther 21, was the main one who had was the same person who had infiltrated Malcolm X's Organization of African American Unity as an agent for the FBI. If one part about his movie that Spike portrayed correctly was that when Malcolm was shot, the guy who was standing over him, like giving him mouth to mouth, that was him. That was the guy. And you'll hear Betty say, "Get off of him, get off of him." You know, she's a nurse. She knows that when you have a sucking chest wound, you don't give someone mouth to mouth. You're just going to blow the rest of the air right out of them. You know, you have to bandage that wound, stop bleeding, you know, bandage it over, you know, to keep, you know, the blood inside. You know, you don't push the rest of the air out. So these things, these tidbits of history, so that we understand and pass that to the next generation, is, you know, what's important. When, because when I talk to them, that's their thing. That's what they want. They want their sacrifices to be recorded and as part of the strategy for New Africa as we go forward with those plans and protocols to set that in for. And those things come from them also. The great comrade Elder Jalil Musa King, another 46-year political prisoner up in upstate New York, who in his great volume, We Are Our Own Liberators, Selected Prison Writings by Jalil Musa King. I mean, you just have to have this one right here. Jalil lays out the national strategy for what he calls, you know, Frolinon, you know, each liberation organization throughout the world, you know, whether they're in Colombia, you have FARC, Forces of Armed Revolutionary Colombia, or whether you're in Africa and you have, you know, the MPLA, Movement Popular Liberation Angola. You have these names of these revolutionary organizations that fight against colonialism and white supremacy that are called front. You know, until you can establish a government, you're a front. You know, you're establishing yourself as organizations together, you know, to stand against that which you're standing against. So he calls it Frolinon, the Front for the Liberation of the New African Nation. And of course, we know we call ourselves nominally the New African Nation here in the United States, just based upon, you know, that identity, re-identifying with being an African, not an African American, but a new African, one who has reconnected to that knowledge and culture and history of being an African after having gone through the Maafa and slavery. So that new African liberation front is a part of that strategy that Jalil was laying down in regards to
you talking about Baba Jalil?
No, yeah, Baba Jalil Musa King. the Black Panther political prisoner. And in that writing, we're our own liberators. We use that for political education in regards to, we have a great event coming up too in September, the RBG Music Festival and African Diaspora Conference, where we're prepping the artists that will participate in that music festival with Jahlil's prison writings. You know,
September what?
September 13th through 15th in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Where at in Atlanta?
We're nominally setting the venue now. We got a couple of choices and just narrowing them down.
Either okay.
Over the amphitheater, either at the amphitheater over in Lithonia, or there's the orchard over in off of Abernathy that we're looking
okay.
at. We're narrowing down the organization in regards to Brother Tahir RBG is working with me on it, and he's going to pretty much handle the artist and the music festival part, and I'm going to deal with this African Diaspora Conference. But
right.
Back the political prisoners. Jahlil, in this volume, because a lot of times we recount that history of what happened to them. We can talk about all those who were killed in battle and those who are still in prison. But when you talk to them and work with them, their thing is wanting to pass that information forward. So I do the political prisoners report every Friday on WRFG FM, and it's kind of gone from a historical-based thing of recounting the story to a solution-based thing where we actually go into strategies for the youth who are organizing, you know, and others, so that we have these strategies recorded that it becomes so important in situations, I'm telling you. In particular, when you go into depth with things like the socialist principles of combat liberalism and unity, criticism, unity, you know, they become tools whereby which you understand the brothers and sisters, when they dealt with them before, use these things to get through what we're stuck at right now as New Africa. All of the little petty arguments between each other, the brothers versus sisters, you know, and all this mess, when the greatest goal and aspiration of any people is just sitting right there in front of us. We got all the technology. We got the education now. We got the right to move about the planet and move, do anything we want to do. But because of that brainwashing, that self-hatred, we want our word to be more intelligent than the next person's word. And so
let me
all
ask
of
you
this
something.
Debate, yes, sir.
Well, let me ask you something. It's something. It's a good point that you brought up. I just want to ask you, how can different thinkers? Well, let me just say this. One of my hosts had a show on Saturday night on Provocative Thought. He said that we had to go back in our history and really do some critical thinking and look at the mistakes that were made, so we won't repeat them. It's saying that, right? One of the mistakes that I think that we made in our past is that we couldn't get all aspects of our thinkers, like progressive, revolutionaries, conservatives, all across the span of thinkers and come to the table. Why do you think that is so difficult? I mean, I have a hypothesis about that, but why do you think it's so difficult to bring people from different thought to the table to come with a strategy? Not the same strategies we had in the 50s, not the same strategies we had in the 60s, but come up with a strategy to combat some of the issues that we're experiencing today.
Well, you know, we have organizations out here. We have, for example, we have organizations, the UNIA, you know. Well, they're facing factionalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
The AAPRP, there's been a downward spiral of them since the death of Kwame Ture, the great Stokely Carmichael, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else we got? We got Malcolm X Grassroots, you know. just kind of located in they in Atlanta. My children are in their New African Scholars program. Very good program, but just limited in scope. They're in Atlanta. They're in New York. They got a faction in Oakland. So it's not like it's organization that stops it from happening. There's these little petty issues that we talk about with personalities and things like that, right? But when you get into organization work and you use those principles, you can avoid that. But most people don't want to be in no organization. You know what I mean? They just want to get on the internet and, you know, spout their opinion. And that's our problem. That's what Kwame Ture used to tell us. Join an organization. You ain't got to join my organization. Join one of these out here that's doing the stuff that you want to do. Or if that don't work, make your own one. But make it based on Pan-Africanism. You know, that's the whole thing. The Black Panther Party was great because they had organization. They started off with healthcare center and buses. One of Matulu's charges is robbing the Brinks truck to make cabs, to get cabs to take children to school in Mississippi. You know, that's what they did. They provided service to the people. So out of that service, now you do something for this sister or this mother or this elder, now they don't mind sending their son with you to train with you, to be a fighter for you because they saw how organized you were and how you were able to be there for them. What we have to do is not going to come out of the blue. It's going to come through hard work, organization, and people that focus enough to take a political agenda and work it to the bone and do not be distracted. You know what I mean?
What type of political agenda do you think we should have?
The work already been done. I mean, it's so simple. I mean, you could just take Garvey's work. You know, if the UNIA want to argue with each other and fight and all of that, just take Garvey's work. We don't owe it to them. They ain't the only ones who can use it. We know Garvey's work is right, right?
Right.
He gave us a charter. He gave us a constitution. He gave us our flag. That's why we call it RBG for the red, black, and green. All of the principles are there. It's just it's organization that's lacking with us. We got all of the principles and the history and the great. I mean, hell, one day we're going to wake up and realize, you know, man, look, if we do not organize ourselves immediately and stop bickering and fighting, you know, we might find, you know, ourselves in a place of decimation. It's happened to people before in history. And the African in the United States is very vulnerable to this. We already know they got the camps built, you know. They're murdering these brothers by police. Since last year, the rate of murder, well, what they call death, inside of prison has jumped threefold. So they're getting brothers in these prisons and killing them in there. We're in a genocide machine, and the examples of what we need to organize ourselves have already been laid out. We just haven't gathered them together and properly organized ourselves in a disciplined way. You know what I mean? We have organizations, you know, but they're either limited in scope. Or they buckle, you know. I like.
Or they don't have the monies, or they don't have the resources.
Well, see, when you have organization, the resources are gonna come, bro. You know what I mean? The Panthers didn't have nothing. They didn't have no money, but they was in every city curing sickle cell, doing free breakfast programs, giving rides to children's school, looking out for the elders, paying their bills.
Yeah, my brother, God rest his soul, was a Black Panther in New Jersey. So they used to have meetings at my house. So I'm very aware of their work.
Yeah, so you get 10 or 12 cats in there, and they tip $5 or $6 a piece. You know what I mean? The unity and the organization make the resources appear. You know, we've been able to do stuff for organization. I didn't think we used to give children scholarships and send people to Africa and like where that money come from? Oh, such and such gave this and such gave that, and you know, because they trust organization. See, when we get organization, Brother Ken, this whole thing gonna be over with. But we play with organization. We've used religion as organization, the church and the mosque. We have not sat down and made a true, real African-centered political organization nationwide in the United States. And that's our problem. Period. That's it. There is not one. You can say the
name of the How will you encourage? How will you encourage a, let's say, I don't know, a liberal to work with you?
You really can't.
Now,
I mean,
let me describe this liberal. A liberal okay. that believes in pro-blackness, believe in Africanism. It's just that he or she. It's a liberal, you know, votes and campaign and participate in different, I guess, the traditional organization, like the this is a black person, I guess. I guess he or she is part of the NAACP, NAACP.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. We do. I mean, hell, I go to the Concerned Black Clergy meeting. That's the path. In America, I mean in Atlanta, I work at WRFG where we, you know, hell, all kind of people, the white socialists and, you know, all kind of people, right? But the thing about it is we are able to, our comrades know if you're a true comrade, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a true comrade, you have no problem with me taking a revolutionary stance of Pan-Africanism and still be my comrade. If you got a problem with that, then I know you're not my comrade. But like you say, this person believes in that also. We go through what Kwame Ture calls converting the unconscious to conscious. That is that's an art. You know what I mean? That's an art. You know what I mean? Just like you see the same cat every now and then at the grocery store, whatever. You might have a fly in your pocket. You drop it on him one time. You know what I mean? You know, you see him again, you give him the salute, you know, the African salute with the fist. You know, you just work on him just a little bit at a time. You know you can't give him too much, you know. But you never turn away from your people if they not giving you, you know, any negativity. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, because we presented too much of a patriarchal, you know, like you know, just the demeaning approach to it, you know, the angry militant, that we got to evolve from that into, you know, being caretakers of the people, not putting down a militant stance, but not showing the outwardness of that. You know, you ain't got to wear your beret and your black and stuff every day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that stance in your heart, that's more strategic also. And then at the same time, we're able to, you know, Just deal with the people from a normal basis. They can say, "Oh, that's one of them Dasiki guys," you know. No, I got
to ask you this, Brother Scarborough. Let me ask you this. I want your view on this. Do you believe? And I know Pan-Africanism believe in black economics, owning your own land. Doing business around the world, with African peoples all around the world, having our own political system, and what have you. With that said and done, with that Pan-African thought, will you involve yourself with traditional politics?
No. I'm not a reformer. The whole American system has to go. You know, and I have friends who
the whole American system gotta go. The American system that we know of, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about like the way that, like, I'm in Georgia, the way the state of Georgia is set up, where you know you have this many white people there and you have this many black people there, and when they go and pick the jury, when they convicting people of crime, they're able to gerrymander, skew it to the point to always being in their advantage. It got to be rooted up from the beginning. You know what I mean? It was based on the slavery, the capture of Africans and the working of them, and the genocide of Native American people. you know. Mm-hmm. That's the foundation of this country. You know, it's rotten to the core. There's no fixing it. I believe in local politics, like Sister Abel Mabel. I work with her. Mm-hmm. I be telling her too. Abel Mabel,
you can have our own political party.
All these flyers, but I ain't going to vote. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to help you pass out all the flyers to all the people that want to vote, but I'm not going to vote. Because
I think we can have our own political party. I think the original Black Panther Party, the original Black Panther Party believe in having their own political party. Do you feel that way today?
The original Black Panther Party was a political party.
Mm.
The Black Panther Party did not start with Huey and Bobby, remember? The Black Panther Party started in Lowndes County, Mississippi, with the Lowndes County Freedom Party, with Fannie Lou Hamer and them. They were the Black Panther. Their symbol was the Panther. They were a party, right? Mm-hmm. But Huey and Bobby, the worst thing could have happened to that shit was it to go to California, the show capital of the world. You go to the court, it looked good for you to go up in the Sacramento in the state house with the shotguns and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But by that showboat attitude, you gave away the whole strategy and opened yourself to the most vicious attack of COINTELPRO that ever happened to an organization. By not taking strategic, you should have had some cats in a suit, you know, with a tie that got some degrees and putting them out there for office. You should have. You should have, but you didn't. See? And the balance of it, I can't question it myself. You know, I was born later. But now with my mind, if I had a military organization, it would have just as many lawyers as they got fighters, you know. Because you have to have that type of protection. You know what you're facing. You know what I mean? So, no, I somebody has to be the one to say, no, it's no good all the way, and I don't want to mess with it at all.
Just press one if you have a comment or a question. And a lot of there are some thinkers out there that say we need our own land, we need our own economics and finance.
Oh yeah.
How you feel about that strategy?
Well, New Africa, that idea from the Republic of New Africa, which many of our great elders were a part of, to inhabit and take and organize those five southern states is an idea that I believe in greatly. And I think that I've had the chance to work with the great Chokwe Lumumba, not his son so much, in the early 2000s, back when I was in the New Black Panther Party. And we have to do that. Not everybody's going to go to Africa. You know what I mean?
No.
But we have to have something here organized and have our own independent land where we have our own laws, our own schools, our own churches, our own bus system, our own airlines, everything. You know, we have to have that. That's not something that is like, you know, you ask me, you know, do I believe in it? I more than believe in it. If we don't get it, we're going to lose. You know, we got to find a way. If we just decide to all move to one city together, you know what I mean? We're going to have to find a way to band together for protection and, like you say, economic security and development. We're going to have to find a way to do that.
Well, you know, maybe you want to take a page out of Dr. King's book, not march there, but just like start with the 10th city. Just go to every black community, say, if you want to come, get on the bus, let's go. You ain't coming back. We starting a new society. That's what he tried. That's how a lot of blacks wound up living in D.C. That came from 10th city and whatnot for the poor people campaign.
Right, right. The poor people campaign, and that's what Martin was working on when they killed him. I was
right. That was too strong. Now you talk about economics there. You gotta remember, we spend $1.3 trillion. So we do have our own personal resources, but we invest it in the wrong way.
What I said, Brother Ken, organization. That's the problem. If we could get organized, man, it could be the old lady at the church that just go around and say, hey, look, here's a little fund. Put $5 in there. Put $10 in there. We're going to take this, and when one of the elders' bill ain't paid, we're gonna pay it with that. That's all it takes. That's
Brother Scarborough, let me ask you something. You know this idea is not a new idea. You know this is not a new idea. Why black folks are scared to think this way today?
Well, there's a reason why.
But this your thought come out of black nationalism, the original black nationalism. Now, why are people...
Because I thought about it. You know, I read the history of it. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood, mm-hmm. Florida, those were thriving economic black centers. You know, mm-hmm. we had our own shit. I know, because
we didn't want that for nobody.
Yeah, I'm a Seminole. We had our own land. Matter of fact, we got reservations. I grew up where the police couldn't even come out there. You know,
we got a question. We have a question or a comment online. Welcome to Black Earth America.
Yeah, how you doing, brother? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
How you doing, brother? When a brother was just talking about organizations and things, I was thinking, because I've been in organizations myself here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and being a part of those black organizations, I realized what Marcus Garvey said before, and I said this on another show Brother Kenny had, which is you have to organize the organizations. And I say that because most of these the organizations I've been in, it might be the leader of the organization that might not get along with somebody else in another organization. But at the end of the day, they do not come together. On top of these organizations, most black organizations are under surveillance. How are most black organizations under surveillance? Because it's 501c3. Since Lyndon B. Johnson came out with 501c3 in 1957, they tried to figure out a way to keep churches, to make them be quiet on social issues and political issues, and how to keep that disconnected from the black or the average community. And so they progressed from 501c3 to faith-based initiative. And so now you look at these organizations, because when I was in these organizations, we'd be merging with the Boy Scouts of America, but they went bankrupt because they got so many lawsuits about child molestation. And I learned, and it was brothers that was a part of these organizations that were running. Now, I ain't gonna say running, but they were put in a leadership position in these organizations in the Boy Scouts. And I noticed that they was effeminized. Like, they take weak men and they put them in the head of organizations, or the brothers and sisters, they got their own organizations. We got ego problems. We have ego problems, and we can't come together somewhere. Like, for example, I'm not going to say Umar Johnson scammed people on him, because I don't believe that he did that. I always stuck by him. I did have my own questions in terms of his business plan and how he was going to pay for certain things and the teachers, but I never left his side in terms of thinking that he beat people for their money. The reason why I'm saying that is because conquer and divide tactics is being used against black folks so much to where we start to turn on each other. That's why I don't never come out against another brother publicly. At least I'm going to try to contact him through an email, or I'm going to try to contact him, and I'm never going to attack. Now, it's some coons that's out there that I'm going to attack. It's just some straight-up coons out there that I'm going to attack.
You got to hunt them coons now. You got to hunt them coons now.
And yeah, we got to get rid of the coons.
Instead of attacking someone that might have a different message than you, I would try to educate and make them knowledgeable of what we try to do. You got to remember, you don't know a person's background. You know that person fights, or what that person got to do in order to survive or be a corporate person or whatever. Instead of attacking the person, try to educate the person.
Right. I want to say something about what the brother said. Brother, that is the key to the key. Organize the organization. And see, it's tools in that. You know, the Black Panther Party and them had tools they used that one called Unity Criticism Unity. First, you say something good about somebody, Then if they got they slacking in one little area, you say something about that. Then you come back and say something else good. You give two goods for one negative.
And what Gay Edgar Hoover did,
and
what Gay Edgar Hoover did, and I'm gonna finish on this, brother. What Gay Edgar Hoover did, he did the number one strategy against black people coming together. The number one reason for black folks to come together is unity and solidarity. Well, what's the number one enemy against unity and solidarity? That's conquer and divide. We're going to get these females some welfare. Because these women, these black, not all black women, but most of these black women in the United States of America has became men, and they don't even know it, through the social programs that we have, the child support courts, the divorce courts, and the family courts. When you have a baby by these females, you better get two king-size beds. You better make room for the lawyers. And it ain't swiping the sisters. It ain't talking down against the sisters. It's how they use us against each other. So if a sister listening tonight, we need you, sisters. And sisters, you need us. We are nothing without each other.
We need each other. We ain't nothing without each other. If we divide, we let them separate us, they're going to wipe both of us out.
Exactly.
That's all it is. And they, you know, that statement, I mean, is sometimes the truth get mixed with opinion. The truth of the fact is that they carried out that operation. And we were a nation that were going through integration where we dropped those independent institutions that we had that supported us, you know. And so
let me ask y'all something. Let me ask y'all something. Do you think integration hurt our people or
it devastated us? Because if you heard that other show that I put on before it came, you got to understand these Europeans, these Caucasians, they put projections out. If they want to carry out some plans 50 years from now, 200 years from now, they put in institutions to carry out those plans. They don't just think, they got think tanks. And so what happens is when in the New Deal was in 1933 when everybody got Social Security numbers. But the second New Deal, when Roosevelt took that trip down to Brazil and he talked to the president of Brazil, Getulio Vargas, in 1938, Getulio Vargas. And mind you, the most black people that went outside of Africa went to South America. Most of us didn't come to North America. So Getulio Vargas knew about integration. And he was telling Roosevelt, you're doing your segregation wrong. If you really want to destroy the black dollar, you must integrate and create some type of accommodationist bills. And so my daughter came home today with a Rosa Parks thing, and my daughter's 7 years old, so I had to break it down to my daughter that it really wasn't Rosa Parks. It was a little sister, a young sister by the name of Claudette Colvin in 1954. And she was on a Lincoln Heights bus in Cleveland, Ohio. Downtown bus, and four homeless white men got on the bus and they needed the front seat. She didn't give it up. But she was a bad spokesperson. Why? Because she was a dark skinned sister and she was pregnant by a married preacher. And so they used Rosa Parks to reenact that moment, but except for this time they had the cameras around. And so my point of bringing all this up is a reason why they integrated. They integrated us to still segregate us. I read a book recently by a sister named, her last name is Tatum, Why Are All the Black Children Sitting in the Cafeteria Together? And she wrote that book because they integrated us to still segregate us. You know, it was a strategy. All of it was a strategy because they welfare replaced the black male. And the black women took on the mindset that I don't need a man for nothing. Not all black women, but a lot of black women took on the mindset that I don't need a man for nothing. He can't do anything for me.
Hold that thought. We have another call. Just hang on, Shaka. Hang on right there.
Okay.
Welcome to Black Girl of America. You're on there. 111.
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking my calls, my friends. This is Mike. I mean, we have seen in the prisoners, in the prisons, you know, we have many unjust, prisoners are black. Mm-hmm. I mean, for nothing, you know, for example, they show in democracynow.org. If you go, you see them, their transcripts and also their video, that this gentleman accused of taking a backpack of people, and I guess those people could not find the right person. They said, oh, that guy is in the other side running. Maybe when people running because you're jogging, you know? They said that person. So they catch him, they put him in New York. Yeah, New York police, New York Long Island prison. They abused them. They beat them guards, beat them because they got the footage. Finally, he is a college student. So basically he suicided himself. He killed himself in the jail. So we have a steal from Green Book that I saw it today. I mean, still we have long ways to go to bring harmony and peace and love and unity to the people of America.
Where are you from, my brother? Where are you from?
I am from Asia, Singapore.
Oh, okay. You're a black man from Singapore.
No, I am Mike. No, I have a DNA of black in my DNA.
Yes.
But we are all people from the same planet. So we are all connected together. You see how it's easy somebody call you from somewhere in Asia, why and vice versa. So every technology, everything is there. But unfortunately, our hearts are not close to each other, and that's the big problem for the United States especially. And as we don't have much time in the United States, my friends, if we don't eliminate racism in this country, ASAP, we are going to encounter big shaking of the earth. This time, great spread. And so we will have
Let me ask y'all something.
Shush.
You think racism will ever die?
It's true, love.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. I think that is possible. If we can get rid of the racist, it's possible.
This country is not on racism.
I think if we understand, first of all, what the definition of racism is, because there's Webster Dictionary. Webster Dictionary says racism is the hatred of one group of people against another group of people, basically.
That's not true.
And so, like I think, it's a power-based thing, and it's a privilege to come with it. And so, black folks, we can discriminate. Like I could choose what restaurant I want to go to, because there's nothing wrong with discrimination if you think about it. Because if I choose to go to McDonald's, I chose that restaurant over other restaurants. If I chose to ride a bike to work,
right.
If I chose to ride a bike to work versus driving my car to work, I would prejudice in my decision. But when we're talking about oppression,
yes.
And people being systematically oppressed and being discriminated against, the definition needs to be defined first. Then, and when you said, will it ever die? Racism would die when the creators of it, which is the Caucasian Europeans, die off, and when the mindset because white people could die right now. There's still going to be racism. It's still going to be a residue that's left behind because of the mindset and the mentality of the like the economic system is European. These UCC codes that we go by, these laws these Roman laws that we go by to these days that's disguised as American laws. So it'll die not only once the people that created it die, but once the residue dies and the planet will recover from it.
I see, brother.
I am sure it will happen through earthquakes, through the mega storms, and through all this. Texas underwater, through Florida underwater, these places, globally, right now we see everywhere is underwater. every time you see it, right now, India and Pakistan is in the brink of nuclear war right now within the next 72 hours.
And even
so,
when you just said a nuclear war, who created the nuclear weapons? The Caucasian Europeans.
Yes, created these weapons.
So
I know that.
It has us fighting amongst each other. The caste system that they got in India, the Brahmin
right.
system, all these different
right.
systems that they got in place in India, like the British East, the East Indian British Company, how they killed off all these East Indians and how they had the Dravidians and how they set these castes, the lighter, the brighter, the darker, the worse. And they China.
Also today, brother, I'm the chair of the African Union's diaspora office. So I deal with cases and issues of populations of black people around the world. And there's a place in the South Pacific right now called West Papua New Guinea.
I know what you're talking about. Yep. They got brothers over there. They're doing things too.
Fujian.
The Indonesians have them under an absolute genocide at this particular time.
Yep.
They have for the past few years at the behest of an American company called Freeport-McMoRan. This company, Freeport-McMoRan, is one of the most diabolical international corporate capitalist institutions ever created. This company took down a whole glacier mountaintop on these people's islands. You know, when you get a glacier on top of a mountain, you know, and it's in the South Pacific in a tropical zone. It got an ice cap on it. This controls the weather all around this region. These people took this whole damn mountain and then genocided all the people all around it and made the biggest gold mine in the world. You could see it from space. So when you're talking about
they dug all them holes in those people's grounds in Papua New Guinea, and they messed the land up, and they left the people to defend themselves.
Yes,
right. And then they moved the Indonesian army in, and the Indonesian army they just decimate those people. I mean, I saw one video the other night. They had a brother in Papua in a cell and had a snake wrapped around him, just torturing him with the snake. You know, you can find that video on Facebook. The a Papua man tortured with snake, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
So black people are you know, we're attacked around the world. And so
we've been enculturated. We've been absorbed in someone else's culture. Like Amos Wilson said, you think that was in the past? He said, I ask you, what language do you speak? What name do you go by? What food do you eat? You think that stayed in the past? Nothing. I wake up with the past every day with the name that I got, with the language that I speak. I don't hate anybody, but I only love my people because I see everybody else, they get along with each other, even if they don't do the best. But I'm going to do the same with my people because it's war. You know what I'm saying? And that's just how it is.
That's just how it is, bro.
What I think is, my friends, as United States going out of the field, and once we go out of the field, then, through the earthquakes and all other disaster, and plus, the Civil War too, it's right on the corner. Because, if we can stop it, it would be great. But I don't know if we have that much time. Go ahead, sir.
With that, gentlemen, I'm glad that you called in. Brother Scarborough, I'm going to be reaching out to you, especially by September, so I can come to that event, and I appreciate Shaka. You having a show tomorrow night?
Yeah, I'm having a show tomorrow.
Okay.
It's called Elephant in the Room, y'all. Every Wednesday. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time.
That's right. I already shout out, brother, in the beginning of in my intro, man. You're going to pick it in again, huh? I'm going to stay in contact with you. And I appreciate the callers and everybody listening, man. And
I appreciate you all.
You got anything last thing to say before I sign off?
Well, forward to Pan-Africanism, free the land, and peace and power to all African people.
That's right, brother. That's right.
Peace and power.
Yeah, so I thank y'all for coming on, man. And like I said, Brother Scarpa, I'm going to be staying in contact with you. And especially because I do try to stay in contact with people that I think they are doing stuff for the people.
I appreciate it, brother.
All right, I appreciate it, brother.
Look, we need to get in contact too, man. Brother Kenny, give him my information.
Okay,
most
definitely. Will do.
All right,
do.
Peace and power.
Good night, everyone.
I love y'all, brothers.
All right.
Good night.
That was a very interesting discussion. You know, wow, a brother, an Asian brother, agree with us. Ain't that something? As always, another Tuesday, I am because we are because I am. Good night.
Hold it now!